and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Michael Wood, joined once again by Aaron Dugan. Aaron, how are you getting on?
Thanks for coming back on, Mike, and doing an impromptu episode for us, like.
Yep, that's no problem at all. Yes, I'm. If you can hear me, of course, I'm a bit under the weather. The winter flu has finally caught me. But yes, we're back, and I suppose this is a bit of a kind of off the cuff episode because we're recording this. We've been waiting perhaps for a statement to come out from the club. As we recorded at 12:15 on Wednesday, it's not been forthcoming as of yet. But yes, the Lowland League vote happened on the 6th, on the 18th, sorry, Monday night, and by a majority of 8-7, the B teams are going to remain in the season in the Lowland League for another 2 seasons. It was only going to be a 1 year project, and that's now extended to 5 years. There seems to be more so a clamouring for the B teams to be ejected from it. Rangers, of course, this season elected not to go down this path once again. They felt for 18 to 21 football, there was no clear and concise path of progressing players, and they didn't feel like the Lowland League was it, even though they invested a huge amount of money into the squad itself. But Adam, what are your kind of overall thoughts on the B teams being here for another 2 seasons?
Hey, well, I've always been against it, Mike, and that says we've again. It feels like we do this once a season. Well, I'm guessing we do because there's always been a vote, but it just feels that it's been a bit of a vote against what in the majority of fans want, really, and that says across Scotland rather than just Cowdenbeath itself as well. But I just. I was thinking that says because I was a wee bit angry about it. That says yesterday, and that says, but it just feels a bit apathy now. That says I just feel a bit, just fed up with it. That says there's not because, but I've always likened them to vampires that once you invite them in, there's no getting rid of them. We've had another good couple of chances now to get rid of them, and. Well, the majority of teams just aren't taking it for whatever reason, and I think the silence from our board is deafening at this point.
Yeah, I think 15 clubs voted, one was an abstention. The 8 clubs that voted for it, I believe, were Tranent, Albion Rovers, who are quite vocal about it, Linlithgow, Berwick, again, another team that are quite vocal about it, Cali Braves. That's five. Is there any more that leap to mind? But I think the teams that were in opposition. I sorry the teams that sorry teams that avoided to reject it were Albion Rovers, East Derbyshire, Berwick Rangers, Tranent, Linlithgow, Bo'ness and Cali Braves. The teams that voted for it have been silent, and listen, they don't need to come out and say anything. But I think, like you said, when a lot of anger on Twitter, especially amongst the Cowdenbeath supporters, so now obviously those that are against something are usually the most vocal on social media platforms. It doesn't necessarily speak to the whole fan base, but if you look at like the poll that we've put up, and if you want to vote for it, just go to the Cowshed underscore on Twitter, and you'll be able to find it. But it's 75 votes, 86% against it. I mean, that's now not everybody's going to be a Cowdenbeath fan that's going to be voting in that poll. But again, it seems like a large majority of fans, as you've quite rightly said, are not for this kind of thing. And it comes down to really the simple principle of sport integrity as well. I believe James McCarthy played in a game against East Stirlingshire a few weeks back. Sorry, not
East
East
Kilbride, I
Kilbride,
think it
East
was,
Kilbride,
mate.
yeah, East
That's just.
Kilbride, yeah. Now James McCarthy is obviously a very experienced Irish international, been in the game a long while he's not at the peak of his powers, of course, he's far from a fifth-tier footballer. And then the next week, that's potentially a young 16-year-old that's going to be running back against potentially East Stirlingshire instead. And it's like there's no kind of parity and quality in terms of the team that's going to be facing week to week. And while it is good for a pathway for players to get into, I think there's only a handful of players, if any, that have really made their first team debuts for the from their B teams into the first teams at Celtic and Rangers. I think the Rangers team on Sunday, for example, against Aberdeen in the League Cup final, didn't have any Scottish players in it. So it shows you that their pathway isn't quite the most promising in terms of getting young Scottish quality through. And we've talked about this in the past, like Zach Lovelace. Rangers spending most people, most teams' full outlay on one player. get him to playing the B team, 16-year-old from Millwall. So I don't know how that necessarily progresses the young prodigious Scottish talents. So just from a pure sport integrity standpoint as well, it kind of makes a farce for the league, and it makes a rod for their own back when this is a league that's been clamouring for opening up the pyramid, while at the same time stifling the tier 16s below them.
Yeah, well, this is it was James McCartney. Yesterday, I couldn't put my finger on it. I was talking to Norrie Work on Twitter. He's obviously a bit of a groundhopper, a bit of a neutral, so he doesn't have a vested interest, you could say, in the inclusion of the B teams. He's neither for it or neither against it. He says he doesn't really see what the issue is, but I'm guessing it makes sense that he wouldn't have to see as much of an issue without having a kind of a horse in the race, really. He's just there to see a good game of football in the end, and you know, to much to the kind of our charge in the 3-3 draw against Celtic B was quite entertaining, and obviously it was a good game against Hearts B as well at the weekend. But I think it just shows you, with James McCartney getting that game against Sea Skelbride for the B team, that he's been a Premier League standard player. He's played down in England at the highest level. He's played over, I think it was 200 games, did he not play in the highest league in England?
I
He's
wouldn't be
also
surprised.
been capped for Ireland. It's mental to think that he can like line up as a B team in the came for the Celtic B team, and then you can turn around and say, well, it's a point of developing talent and blooding young players up to take the next step in their careers. I think. There's been a kind of number of comments I put up, kind of our kind of the viewpoint that having two teams this season, but also three teams the previous season, that can either get promoted or relegated from the season, means that there's six games for each team to play that are dead rubber for kind of half of the opposition there. So it takes away from the competition on a match day, really, and that says you don't know what kind of team you're going to play against. Either are they going to field a strong team? Is there something coming up through the week, either in the Youth Europa competitions, or are also they play kind of a lot of youth team cup competitions that way that they'd rather race players for, because there's a competitive point for them to play in. So it could mean 3 points to a title challenge for some teams. It could mean 3 points in a relegation battle for some teams that their closest rivals might not get, depending on what kind of team they're going to be facing against. I think when you look down at the East of Scotland League and the West of Scotland League, the teams that are kind of knocking on the door bring a lot more in terms of tradition, in terms of kind of fan culture, in terms of just even decent away days, and that says obviously Hearts B play at Sparks Ground, Ainslie Park, and Celtic B are playing at Excelsior Stadium. I want to go to an away day with Airdrie against Airdrieonians, when there's going to be a bit of a atmosphere at the Excelsior. I wouldn't say it's the best ground to watch football at, kind of the best of times, but when you're there as 200 odd people, with only half of them with a kind of competitive horse in the horse to run, says it's it does take away from the league in a whole.
I'm not even necessarily against James McCarthy playing, for example, because it is good to help young players through the game in terms of the different challenges that he can offer and provide in a live situation. But it's just the case, like when you said, next week that could be a 16-year-old kid playing, and it kind of detracts from it. And like you said, these, while the points for them necessarily don't necessarily matter, they do for our team. So effectively, why are these games counting towards people's title hopes and relegation survival chances as well? So I think that's a good point that you actually make as well. But I do think that the point on, like, if you want to expand the pyramid and do that, you can't be seen to do this kind of nonsense in the same place as well. So you can't have your cake and eat it too, although some clubs want that way. And now I know they'll point to increased revenue potentially from the crowds that come to these games, better relations from just being in the same vicinity as these teams, and the money that you obviously get from stipends from these clubs buying into the lower league as well. But I think you're doing that at the detriment of your own support and your own fans, who, well, let's be honest, it's not the highest attended, it's not the most well attended league in Scotland. And if you start pissing off the boys that may be thinking of doing walk-ups on Saturday as well, and then when it's hard to retain crowds these days, especially some of the avenues that you can go down on a weekend now, there's so much more else to do. I do think you're potentially purging the next kind of generation of fan. I think the diehards will still go, but like, especially if you're Ken Beath and you want to move towards this kind of fan-based or fan-staked kind of ownership in the club, to do this without the transparency, and when you fall back to the supporters meeting that you attended into the summer, saying how the B teams were potentially trying to get a conference together to go into the tier below, effectively separating the fourth and the fifth tier, and the lower league eventually becoming the sixth tier. As a component of that, I think you could understand the kind of thinking there, but then just to still go with it once again. Listen, they're trying to obviously wedge their way in and getting what they want, and I think in the long term they will, because like you said, they're vampires, they're already dead and you can't get rid of them. But I think some of these clubs have got to look at themselves in terms of self-preservation for the long term rather than the short term, and I think you're pissing more people off with these kind of actions than you are trying to bring more people through the gates with the B teams, because like I said, I don't think there is a clamour for people to see these games outside of yourself. You obviously has got a season ticket, but I think in terms of walk-ups, in terms of like the home fans, I don't think you're getting many through more through the gate, and I don't think you're appeasing them with voting them in once again, especially for another 2 seasons. Like, it's only Celtic and Hearts at the moment. Does that mean there's going to be more teams coming in? Does that mean it's going to be diluted even more in terms of the competition? If, say, an Aberdeen, well, I suppose an Aberdeen would be the Highland perhaps, but if a Hibs come in, a Kilmarnock, St Mirren, whoever it may be, is it just going to be the case that the lower league's going to be saturated up to 24 teams, with a lot of them being B teams?
Now, I think that is a good point. That it's a worrying. It's, where does it end? Do you end up with for example, Raith Rovers now are investing heavily in their infrastructure. That says you're going to have a Raith Rovers B. Is it there doesn't seem to be an end point here where there's no real like outlook or a real statement from the lower league or the teams that are voting for this to say, well, this is how far we're going. This is it. Now it says it, as you say, it was a 1 year goal before. We knew it was never going to be a 1 year goal. The latest vote was to take it up for 2 years, not having on a yearly, and that says with a third year as an option. That says at the end of the 2 years, and it goes back to another vote. That says what happens then? What proposals are going to happen? There seems to be a very a quick fix kind of mentality right now with this, and I think there needs to be a concise effort to say, right, well, this is where we see the lower league in 3 years' time, or this is where we want the lower league to be in 5 years' time, and this is our thinking of inviting them in, and this is what we're going to get at the end of it. Nobody wants to see the B teams. I don't want to see the B teams, but there has to be a reason why teams are voting for it. And it can't just be for the £4,000 that's been quoted, because that doesn't go far. That doesn't go far, and I don't think that there's any committee, any board in the lower league that is voting for the B teams to be in solely off of 4 grand a year.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem strange, and like you look at the comments off the back of this statement from the lower league on Twitter, and it's just like they're just there's none very much in terms of the positive, in terms of like fixing the real problems, such short side approach, bigger issue with the pyramids, and I think like the B team's issue isn't one that seems to be a massive problem. It's more holistically was this year progressing players from the 18 to 21 ranges, and it's if these guys are playing 50 of football to start with, then they're maybe not going to make it at the highest echelons of football. For example, Dunfermline's loaned players in the past few years from the B League up to the League One and the Championship, and they've stepped in and they've performed admirably, and that shows that their level was a couple of tiers above this level, and they're only young guys within themselves as well. So, like, if you're good enough, you can make it at a higher level without having to stick about in the loan league for too long. I think the loan system, which obviously needs tweaking and refining as well, so you don't just hoard talent. I think that works far better in Scotland than it does a lot of places because it's still quite small squad sizes. And I think that comes into another point as well. Like, a lot of teams can't afford to have all these kind of young kids and a first team, and then having a few guys into the reserves to kind of aid them through as well, and then try and help them through the game, kind of learn and develop things as well. It's not like the past days of Scottish football when you had squads of 25, 30 plus, and you had like guys who were just kind of towards the end of their career as like career reserve players to help the young guys through. Most days are gone with the kind of shortfall in finances now, and I don't, like I said, I don't really see the long term thinking of B teams being the answer, because Croatia do, for example, or Spain. Like, Spain's a much larger country than us, and like in terms of like the way that they've developed the country in the last 20 to 30 years, in terms of the way that they play football, is so much more advanced. They've got so many more coaches, even per head of capita, and things like that. I think that if you want to help like the grassroots game and the grassroots football, you've got to take a more refined approach rather than just saying like the B teams is going to be the answer to the Scotland's problems. If you want people in the Scotland national team, you've seen the path like John McGinn's gone through, and it's playing in the Championship, kind of honing your craft, moving to a big team in the Premier League, and then exemplifying that in the Championship in the Premier League down south. Like, that's where a lot of the guys are, and it's going abroad now. Like, if you look at the cohort that have been in Italy, none of them played B team football or reserve team football for a long period of time. Like Hickey and Lewis Ferguson is doing amazing at Bologna now. If you've got the talent, you'll go far. And I don't think necessarily B teams are the answer. B teams just seem to be an addendum for whatever reason, because it's an in vogue thing to do. Even like Brentford ditched their academy because they didn't think it was good, necessarily the best way forward for them to progress as a club. They thought just like having a B team, which was just kind of a reserves in effect of players that can play underneath the first team and to go out and play these kind of tournaments, like the Milk Cup and that, etc., was a much better way to do things in terms of how to bring players through from that area. So I don't think just because another country does it means it's the cure all to all ills. And I think that's where Scotland maybe are behind the eight ball. It's like they see somebody else doing something, and then just emulate it. And the thing is, if they're already doing it and been doing it for years, they're so far ahead of the game that they've moved on to the next thing. So you're already so far behind in terms of progress and planning these things, that you need to be more innovative and think forward and think ahead to like what's best for the Scottish culture, what's best for the Scottish game, what's best for bringing people back towards the games, because it's still one of the most attended leagues in the world. But as a wider point, I do think you're seeing people kind of turn away from it at points because they're just getting sick fed up of the governance of whether it's their own clubs or the organisation as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's the nail on the head. Everything seems to be a bit reactionary. That just feel that every thing that gets like put forward is just kind of grass from other leagues without really understanding it. Was it last year we talked to that Dutch guy coming back from Gala Shields who said that the Dutch leagues were looking at getting rid of their B teams and within the league structure and. Obviously, it was the kind of Dutch leagues and Spanish leagues that were cited as the reasoning forward to bringing in the B teams. So it shows you that the kind of one of the flagship nations that brought them in is getting rid of them. I think when you look at the amount of support that goes now to see kind of the lower divisions, the kind of right down the pyramid, there's a lot of people that like going to see the East of Scotland teams, the West of Scotland teams. They're very well supported. They're very well run. I think as things start to balance out, you will see a lot more teams coming up from those for the expense of teams. And to be honest with you, I can see at the expense of the additional 42 teams, I could see the likes of ourselves, Albion Rovers, East Stirlingshire are probably the team right now that are in the greatest peril of falling down further down the leagues. But I think as teams coming up from the East of Scotland League and the West of Scotland League, we'll see casualties from the Lower League that we'd probably been surprised with 5, 10 years ago.
Yeah, because I mean, if East Kilbride go up as you expect this season, every Lowland League winner since the playoffs have been introduced has gone up eventually. And like I said, as we keep saying, like nobody's came back, and like that again, that was short-termism by the 42 to think, right, we'll try and make it as hard as possible to get promoted. But the problem is, once you come down, then it's equally as hard to get. Well, sorry, it's harder to get back than just staying in the division. And then Montrose learned a lesson to say, right, we're not going down, and they're the only club to survive being in a playoff and not eventually going down as well. So like you do have to be careful. And an ambition and project and all these buzzwords, they're nice and fuzzy and warm, but the issue is as well, like teams can spend their money, but as long as the money's going into the right places, like the infrastructure such as Kelly, which seems to sustainable now that the way they've cut their cloth accordingly. And it's not maybe not been the same for the teams that have come down. They're just not necessarily expected to come down. They thought, oh, we'd always be kind of safe. Even if we finish bottom one year, we'd be able to survive and bounce back. And it's just not been the case. And I think that's maybe where they've been caught in the hop and caught our eye is like there are teams that are spending money because whether it's just big investors, well-run committees, however you want to put it, but they do have a lot of these teams. A lot of these organizations do have a good structure around them as well. Like you've seen Bonnyrigg, okay, they get a lot of stick because of the big slope in the park. And while it's very much a rudimental kind of stadium, as you've seen with things like the Social Club as well, the Social Club is expansive and it was quite well packed out for that game against Kenilworth in the relegation playoff. And it's things like that. It's like that's how you bring extra finance and extra resources, and it's actually how you sustain and build a community within the town or the city that you're in. And I think that's maybe where some teams are going awry. It's like how do you build a community and how do you make it people's routine to come to the ground on a Saturday and let's be honest, spend that extra money that they have or get people to spend £20 a month if it's to put into the supporters trust and things like that. And I think that's where Kenilworth are going right at this moment in time. They're starting to build up that community investment as well. The Junction Bar doing a lot of great things as well with their support. But like things like this have the potential to cause fissures in the support base. Like I said, I think it's the diehards will still keep going, but the kind of fair weather fan, I think you'll see slowly drifting off if they don't feel like they're getting full transparency. Or they don't feel like their voice has been listened to. If you do feel like your voice has not been listened to, then why are you going to part with £20 a month in terms of putting into a supporters trust if you feel like your views are not being heard in the first place? And I think that's maybe where a few teams have gone wrong in this issue is like transparency is key. Fans just want to be told. Now, they might not agree with the decision or not. But for example, I didn't know this. B team vote was coming up, and I try and keep across as much as possible and all things about Scottish football. And I think without like consultation with the fans, or even like a memorandum of like how do you want to vote, like I think Caledonian Braves did a bit like a Twitter poll, saying like, "Oh, visit the website, go into the app, and let your voice be known if you want to support the B teams or not." And I just think that hierarchical decisions being made by a select group of a few people without outside voices can really cause fractures within a football club and their support base.
No, I think it's at a time when we've announced that we're a bit under that we're struggling to get people to sign up for the CISS. It'd probably been the perfect time to show what you could have done. You know, it's even if you're saying, can sign up for a tenner a month and can we'll put things like this to a vote. Or says even like talk about that kind of being a bit of silence. You don't need to put a public announcement out. You don't need to can justify yourself to angry Falkirk supporters on Pine Bovril or angry says or can or you've got season ticket holders that have been kept in the dark here. What the reasoning is? The club went staunchly from being anti-B teams, we're voting against them every time to go and we're voting for them because of this reasoning, and this is the best way that we believe to stop it. And that says, rightly or wrongly, to voting for them without really any inkling of why or any inkling of oh well, this is what's going to happen if we don't vote for them again this time. And I think that it's more so now the silence that's damaging the team. Now it says you're not going to get people coming up to sign on now without because a lot of people I'd say that 90% if not more are against the B team's inclusion as Cowan B fans. You're not going to get people signing up for the CISS now without or are very unlikely now to sign up because they're going to see this as a bit of a betrayal of their views, a betrayal of what can be stood for before. And I think that it's been a bit of a misstep by the board, especially at a time when we're doing so much right now that it says the Cowden community is doing fantastic work for the wider Cowden community. You've mentioned the Junction Bar doing absolutely great things with their auctions, with their with being able to present money to the community, to the team, to having big supports for important away days, to the uptake to the CISS at this point. It might not be where we wanted it to be, but it's still a step in the right direction. It feels that the club, for all they've done right, have taken a step back here, and I think you need to at least let the support know. You need to let your CIS members know. You need to let the Junction Bar Supporters Club know. You need to let your season ticket holders know why this happened, why we voted for this. You're on mute.
Sorry, I mute myself. The silence creates a vacuum as well because then it just causes speculation, like we have to do now, about the reasons about why you voted for the B team's inclusions. Now, speculation is obviously dangerous because it's not necessarily right, but it just feels like an honest opinion of the, an honest assessment of the situation at this moment in time through the things we've been told in the past about B teams and why they voted that way to for the inclusion. And I just think, like I said, we're at a time, especially with governments, papers as well. It's like a lot of people want to be told the truth and have their own opinions of what the actual truth is. But even like you said, you don't have to appease the people on Pine Bovril and that. But like I said, if you're not telling your support base and you're not telling those who are most fervent in their fandom, in terms of like you said, season ticket holders and the CISS members, then I do think like you like I said, when it comes back to the point I've been kind of emphasizing over the course of this podcast is you're pissing people off. And this is at a time where people's finances are restricted now, probably more so than ever, especially in recent times. So I think like how are you going to squeeze like a few extra pound out of them a month, for example, and it's not going to be through incentives like this to say like we're just going to do this without any sort of collaboration or kind of even noting that what your opinion is. And I just think that's kind of a sad indictment of like where a lot of things is because, like you said, there's a lot of people volunteering their hard-earned time that's maybe scarce a scarcity to them to the football club, boys off their own back doing incentives to help out the football club, and for them not to be in so any sort of discourse with the board. And it's not to say like their opinion is going to sway and matter, but still people like to be heard. That like we're shouting to this void doing a podcast, and of course it doesn't have a whole opinion. But it's obviously garnered an audience that's an interest of people that are fans of the club and have supported us well. And we thank them for listening, of course, as well. So we're trying to convey maybe some of their points of view across as well, as much as you as a season ticket holder and a fan of the club as well, that you're not happy about this decision and there's not been any discourse. And the fact that this has been two seasons now of B teams that you've had to face in the lower league, and while you're seeing your club do some amazing things in terms of trying to get back to where they want to be as a football club and a football entity, when there's more B teams, then there's more games that don't matter, then just like, not in a sense that you just could give up, but in a sense like, well, why does it matter? What does it matter? Going to see Hearts B, Celtic B, like I said, it's going to extend to Raith Rovers, Dunfermline, Stranraer. Like, where does it kind of stop? And where's the what's the kind of end game? What's the kind of end goal for the B teams and for the clubs that want their inclusion in this league as well?
Yeah, I think a personal point for me would be that we've had a very good couple of cup runs this season in the South Challenge Cup and the Scottish Cup. And we've played teams from the East of Scotland leagues and the West of Scotland leagues that have given us very, very good days. Obviously, Kilsyth Rangers come to Central Park. We've been over the Kill winning. Whitehill Welfare come to Central Park and played us, and all three of them gave us good games. Lanark United come as well, and also it was a bit of a, you know, it was an easier game for us that, but it was still it was nice to see different teams that were competitive against us, and it feels that. Now I'm not saying that Ken, you're going to see all of them in the Lone League in the next Ken 5 years' time, but it just feels a bit like we've seen the competitiveness of these teams. We've seen the kind of the good feeling of them. It was by all stretches of imagination. I wasn't there, but it was a good day out in Kilwinning. A very good day out in Kilwinning, and I think that would it br brought 10 times more next season if. Yeah, Kilk kind of, if a kind of a team like Kilwinning, obviously they're a bit further down the pyramid than the Premier League in the West, but just in terms of away support of seeing new places, of seeing different teams, I think that brings more money, more just well, walk-up support, right, of ground toppers coming out. So I want to go see the first game that Kevin Beef's played against well, Beef, whatever, kind of off the top of my head, or this or we're going through the Largs for the first time ever. That's going to be a trip out, and I think that brings more to the leagues than going to the Excelsior Stadium and sitting there with 200 fans that are sat there in silence because they've not got a real goal for their season rather than just to play games, or going to Ainslie Park to see Hearts B, or inviting them to the Central Park and hoping that you're going to get a handful of fans that are maybe Celtic supporters in the area that can't go to Parkhead or Ibrox or Tynecastle and wanting to come to see the kind of the well their B sides playing a competitive game.
Yeah, because the point I wanted to add to that as well is that the best kind of days we've out I've had out as following you as a Ken Meath fan has been to places like Gala Shields, where it was just a totally different experience talking to some of the local people. Obviously, we got talking to Dutch Martin and chain back up, and he was a, but get correct me if I'm wrong, was he a Lockie United fan? And he,
Okay, yeah.
yeah, and he was just down because their game was off. I think we went in, what was it, February, and it was very snowy and very frozen, probably in the central belt and up towards the Angus area. So he just decided to come down for a game because he'd never been to Gala Shields himself. So that was obviously interesting for him, and it was probably a nice day out for him. And it was a nice day out for us as well, even though it was bitterly cold. And it was just interesting to see like the obviously the stand as well, which is obviously synonymous with down there. And it's just like, you're right, like what's the kind of point going to Celtic B talking to a Celtic B fan? Like what is a Celtic B fan? It's just a guy who watches the under-21s games and is a Celtic fan, really, at the end of the day. And I think for most people anyway, if they follow Celtic, then they'll go to the May games, or they'll be watching the game on Sky if they can't get a ticket, or they'll be at Celtic Park anyway. So I don't necessarily think it's necessarily attracting any more fans through the door. And like I said, it's much more interesting if, say, like a Broxburn are leading the Eastern Scotland League at this moment in time. If they come up, Broxburn is a place that I passed to, never been to the ground especially. But even if like a Jeanfield Swifts come up, a Dunbar United as well, it's like different teams, different co-mingling of fans. And like you said, you get the Groundhoppers, which seems to be an ever-growing kind of feature now on especially on Twitter that you see these days. And we've got people like Terrace Trails and Noy that works, who's they were at the game against Hearts B on Friday night there. Was it Friday night? If I'm not mistaken there.
Yes,
Yeah.
Friday night, yeah.
They were obviously at the games, and you do see more and more people of that proliferating the grounds of Scotland, especially at the lower leagues now. But I do think you find it far more interesting than if Kenilworth were to play Hellbeath in a competitive game, for example, or even just along the road at Crossgates, or even Dundonald, for example. Like, these are teams just in the division below. I think they, if they got there on the sport of merit, of course, have much more to offer and provide than, like you said, the B teams, where you said it's just very wishy-washy. At the end of the day, who really cares? But I suppose we'll spin off from this conversation if you've got anything, unless you've got anything else to add on.
I just say you can also talk about the away days and the can we've yeah, a lot of supporters across the board have come out and said that it seems a bit of a vote of self-preservation, but we've spoken about it seems a bit short-sighted that bringing in proper teams, bringing in proper away days is going to help kind of across the board, that because you're going to bring in supporters that want to have a day out in Cowdenbeath. You're going to get Cowdenbeath supporters that want to have a kind of a day out in Broxburn or a kind of a few pints down in Glasgow as they go see the likes of Clydebank or Pollock. There is a lot of good places that you won't really get to go. That you're going to bring in more money allowing these teams in than just allowing the B sides to well just set up roost.
And I guess my final point as well, it's sometimes people's adventures, you know what I mean? This is what gets people out of the house and gets people going to new and different interesting areas, and maybe they strike up friendships, and who knows what transpires from there. But like you said, while it's not a massive factor in local economies, it does help some local pubs out, it does help some of the local areas out, where there's eateries, etc. And I think that kind of does detract if you do get the B teams in. But all right, we'll just pause that conversation there and park it until the next time this issue comes up, and we'll kind of circle back to the conversation that you had with Colin Nelson last week. How did that go? How did you enjoy it, Aaron?
No, it's just I think when I spoke about it earlier there that the club is doing so much right, and I think it's showing dividends on the pitch. Obviously, the results haven't been perhaps the way we want to see them, but I think a lot of support are seeing the direction that the club's going, how much the team on the pitch has improved. Can we always spoke about also last season that we were hard to beat, and we were hard to beat in terms of it was difficult to get a difficult to break us down, but teams were breaking us down in the end. That says we lost a lot more games at this point in the season than what we did. We had lost a lot more games at this point in the season last season than what we did than what we have this season. The issue is that we haven't had the concentration to stay out a lot of games. Obviously lost we've lost I think 10 points from winning positions in the last kind of few moments of game time this year, which is a massive amount to lose, and has meant that we've found ourselves sitting kind of as low as we have at this point.
Yeah, because I mean, a bit of a reverse Raith Rovers there. I do think from the potential of what you have and where you are, you could be maybe just outside the top six spaces. Same goes for Albion Rovers as well, who've had a disjointed campaign, only played 15 games so far. And I do think it's nice that there's goals back at Central Park, which since the dawn of this podcast, we've always kind of identified as an issue with them. But yeah, just like that lack of clean sheets, lack of, like I said, keeping the score down is really, really is what has hindered you in the short term here. But in just in
Well,
terms of your sort of overall view of things, are you much happier with this campaign as a Kenilworth fan with what you're watching in the park than you were last year?
I can completely in that. I mean, I think from the being back from the start of December, and that since I've seen the both games against the two games against Celtic B and then Hearts B last week, and we're as a team. Well, also we got the two results last season against Hearts, but Hearts are a different animal this season than what they were last season. We've come away with two good wins against them. Obviously, the conditions on Friday played kind of a big part in the game, but it was still an enjoyable game. Both sides tried to play kind of the right way. Kenbeath had some very very good spells of attack and play. Defended well when the at half time once the sides have had swapped goal mouths. We were playing into the wind. Apart from the Hearts B goal, which was carried on by the wind into the path of their striker, thought that we handled the conditions a lot better than what Hearts did throughout the game, and especially into the first half when we had the ball in the net three times. It was the third goal was disallowed, but yeah, I think you see from the highlights that were expertly filmed. You can see that we just knew how to hassle the Hearts goalmouth from set pieces with the two goals. I think that just shows not just the kind of the improved attacking intent, but the perhaps the team seems a bit smarter this season than what it did to react to different conditions.
And I suppose just a kind of general overview of the last few weeks as well. Obviously, 3-3 against Celtic B, the 2-0 in the cup against Inverness, and obviously you thumped Lanark 6-0. I suppose it was good in a sense you've been able to hold yourself against the likes of Inverness for a long period of time. Obviously, they've gone great guns under Duncan Ferguson. They've kind of slacked off in recent weeks. But again, I suppose even going up there and holding them for what was about 80 minutes must have been a tremendous kind of sense of belief, especially for the players themselves, more so than the fans.
Well, that's I think that it was Kyle Ewan was texting me through it, and that says I was sat steaming in the crew bar. I think it just showed the effort that the players put into to hold a team so far up in the championship. But definitely had that new manager bounce with Duncan Ferguson coming in to hold that team to well 80, I think it was 81 minutes in the end that Inverness finally got the breakthrough. And I mean, like, obviously from watching the highlights, the kind of goal mouth held a bit of a charm life at times, but that's what you're going to have as a lone league team, as a team that far. It doesn't take away from the effort of the players to really take the game to Inverness and to cause them trouble. And I think can hold their heads high that we've well taken the Scottish Far as we had, and then taken a team in the championship as far as we could.
Were you a little bit disappointed they didn't get to help Gary Bowen? Oh, was that a little
Ah,
bit disappointing?
I mean, I think football fans are fickle, and that is you can see that from yesterday with Stephen Schumacher leaving Plymouth Argyle, and that he was a hero last season, and now he's on everybody's hit list for the new year. But I think Gary Bowen coming at the right time saved well certainly done his best bit at solidifying Kenbeath for a couple of years, and maybe was in the position too long, and obviously had the kind of big hand in our eventual relegation 2 seasons ago. But I think overall he deserves plaudits for the couple of decent seasons that he had with us.
No, that's a very, very nice political response that you've had there. I suppose on the player front, Dougie Hill leaving, he's going to Berwick, if I'm not mistaken. How's it feel about a club legend like that leaving once again?
I think he. Well, Colin also said that the good work that he'd put in for the club had had refused payment due to his injuries, and then he was his contract was up at the end of January. He said that he was wanting to move on. He could have easily demanded kind of payoff for it. He's refused to take payment for it. It's saved the club a lot of money, kind of, and wages. I think that it shows you the kind of what a good person he is. Colin had said that there's many players these days that say that they love a football club, or kind of that kind of the club's in their heart, and in reality it's not, that they're going to look out for themselves. That it's good to see a player can put their kind of, well, their money where his mouth is in the end, and really come out for the club. Also thinks that he can still show a team something like that. He's went down to Berwick, who have fallen on hard times. So good luck to him down there, and also good luck to Berwick at managing to balance the books and remain competitive.
Yeah, of course. In the upcoming fixtures, you've got Albion Rovers, of course, the Cowshed Derby, of course, with David Nugent. Then you've got a double header against East Lancashire to end out the year. What's your expectations for the next kind of week or so of matches?
I don't see why we can't come away with the full allocation of points. I think the team will be buoyed after a very good showing against Celtic V. We're unlucky to come away to not come away with the win, and then a very, very good match against Hearts V. I can't see why we can't go to Coatbridge on Saturday and come away with the 3 points. Albion Rovers have taken a bit of a rocky month and a bit since having a well, we had said before that they'd probably had the best start of all the teams that had come down in the league. Obviously beating 3-2 off of East Lancashire on Saturday, a draw against Edinburgh University, obviously getting beat in the cups by Bonnyrigg and Bonnyrigg Rose, and then Kilwinning, that Cowbeef had played well against in the South Challenge Cup. I think we should be going there and with the views of taking the game to them, of compounding their misery, and hopefully just widening the gap between us and themselves in the league. They've also got a few games in the hand against us still, so it'd be nice just to get that win to push the gap to 6 points going into their games in hand.
Yeah, obviously you played each other. I say obviously, like everybody knows it, of course. You played each other on Halloween, 0-0 draw at Central Park. Well, none of us were at that one. I believe the worst game of football that any of us attended was when David came a few years ago around this time. And what I was pretty sure it was 0-0, wasn't it, at Central Park? We were all there, and especially that first 45 minutes were the worst 45 minutes of football that any at any level. I'm sure you'll agree. I'm sure Tammy Gill saved a penalty later on to keep Cowbeath in the game. So hopefully
No,
it's.
we missed a penalty.
Oh, did you miss a penalty?
That was right. The Liam Buchanan got a penalty and missed it, and then we had a goal that was chopped off right at the end.
And then Liam Buchanan took his ball and went home. And I think if it's somewhere at a 10 in the game than that, then you'll be buzzing for it. The few times I've been through to Coatbridge to watch Albion Rovers play with David, it's always been five teams, and I've never seen Albion Rovers win a game of football. I've seen Cambeath win there, and I've seen the East Fife win there. So hopefully your journey will be just as fruitful from your perspective when you go there, and hopefully no fisticuffs on the causeway between you and him. But I'm sure it'll be a good outing nonetheless. It always is a good outing in Coatbridge. That is definitely a good day, especially just to view this the stand, the condemned stand across the way from where you'll be situated as well. But I think that'll be a good day out. And I think East Lancashire, I think you made a did you have a good result there last season? I believe you did go to the game last season, didn't you, East
We
Lancashire?
drew with them last season, 0-0, at the Falkirk Stadium, or the Grangemouth Stadium, or whatever you want to call
Yeah.
it. But obviously we beat them quite we beat them 5-0 at home the previous season. Sorry, the previous game at last season in the reverse fixture. So it was obviously a bit of what Cowbeath were last season, very, very hot and cold. But I think that it's definitely a good chance to take well, 6 points from East Anstruther. They have struggled this season under Pat Scullion. Only 4 wins, 4 draws. I know that we've only had five wins, but you feel that on the whole, we've only had the five defeats. East Anstruther have had 11, with 35 goals conceded and 27 scored to our 32 scored and 30 conceded. So I think we should be going there to look to take 3 points away and then also 3 points at home when on the reverse fixture.
Obviously, there's quite a few games in hand, but I mean, in theory, by the end of the year, you should be 23 games through the season out of the 34. It's quite odd the kind of campaign that you've got remaining. That's definitely in the books just now at this moment of time. And you've got Stirling University, the Lowland League Cup. It's nice that it's been played during the course of the campaign now rather than just an addendum at the end of it. That's the 20th of January. You've got East Kilbride in a double header, once in the both at home, once in the South Challenge Cup, and then obviously in the league the following Saturday after. But you don't seem to have too many home games left in the slate so far. Is there any more to be rearranged back into this to the slate, or have you played quite a lot of your home games already?
I think we've played most of our home games already. And I think the University of Stirling is the only one that's outstanding. I'd have to actually have a look through that. And that's just, I think it's just the way that the fixture arrangements just worked out. It's a bit bizarre the way it's worked out, but I think just another reason to try and can. Push on and get ourselves out of this league.
Yeah, all right. I suppose this is the last podcast of the year. We'll hopefully get back before the Willith Rose game. Ideally, get David Nugent to come on the podcast as well, get a bit of infighting between the pair of yous. But in terms of your New Year's hopes, what do you hope from Kenilworth in the subsequent months that's left of this season?
I think it'd be good to see some of the kind of the very good players that we've brought in the sign extensions. I know it's I know there's conversations happening there, but it's also a hard thing to judge with the kind of finances as they are waiting for on NCISS to have a bit of an uptake. Obviously, we'll have to wait and see what's looking like for the cup draws and the and just have to wait to see what happens. I'd like to see, obviously, Jamie Doherty's played very, very well this season. Zach Butterworth's coming in and done fantastic as well. I'd like to see us maybe sign another defender in the centre of defence. I think Robert McNabb and Gregor Jordan. Sorry, I've done absolutely fantastic this season and. So far since Dougie Hill's left, so that's something that I'd like to see us as a look for as maybe another central defender.
Well, obviously, the best to you and your family for over Christmas and New Year. Obviously, those to listening as well. All the best. I know this has been a pretty morose and dour downbeat episode. It's like happened to the B team and the way I sound, more so than usual. But obviously, thanks for your continued support throughout the whole year. And thank you all for listening.